Are you interested in starting your own cash PT practice? Maybe a little side hustle practice right now because you're bored with what you do at work and you're seeing massive volumes of patients. I found the most success by going this route through a practice in a gym. And this is why I started the Gym PT Blueprint. The Gym PT Blueprint is really a program that shows you exactly how to be successful in the cash model, whether it's a side practice or you're diving head first like I did. This shows you exactly how to set your finances up correctly, how to set your practice up correctly, how to sell things, how to market yourself, and how to really convey your unique value to other people so that they'll want to pay you for it. If you are struggling to figure out how to set your practice up correctly, or if you're in practice and you're not making at least five figures a month at this point, you really should check out the Gym PT Blueprint. Head over to drdannymattei.com/products. That's drdannymattei.com/products to take a look at the Gym PT Blueprint and see how this program can help you become successful. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name's Danny Mattei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast.
What's up, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, and today I'm excited to talk to somebody who, we've known each other for a while. And it's interesting because you've been to a course that I've taught. I've been to a course that you've taught. I think you're a better instructor than me, by the way. And the Movement Maestro is on. So Shantae Cofield, AKA Movement Maestro. You may follow her on Instagram. Maybe you've gone to a Rock Tape or a Rock Blades course that she has, she's taught. Hopefully you have. If not, then you definitely should. But we're chatting with her today. It's all about personal branding. So, hey, first of all, thanks for jumping on with me.
Thank you, Mr. Danny. This is awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. I was actually in Hawaii like 2 weeks ago, and the students from your entrepreneur group, it was a student there, and he was like, "Hey, I'm going to go see Danny next week, talking about the podcast." And I was like, "Speak of the devil, I'm going to be on next week." Like, small world. I'm super, super pumped about this.
Well, that's Scott Lane with Surf and Shore Physical Therapy. He's my boy. He came, funny story with Scott. So he came from the furthest away to Atlanta from Oahu. He got delayed and a flight canceled. It took him like 6 hours longer to get here. And then when he went to leave, he was just going to fly to go see his grandparents in South Carolina somewhere. He had to fly into Raleigh. And his flight got canceled twice.
I saw that. I was like, this guy, are you kidding me? Like, did he drive?
He ended up driving because, Charlotte's, it's not too far. But worst trip ever. I don't know if he'll ever come back. So I think the next time that we do a mastermind get together, we'll go to Hawaii. How was Hawaii? Did you do any surfing lessons or anything?
I didn't do any surfing. I did some boogie boarding and I got sick actually. So Hawaii was great. The people were great.
People were awesome.
With Scott, we had dinner. It was really nice, but I got sick and I don't know if it's, and I still have it. You can kind of hear it. I don't know if it was because for those of you that know me, I don't really like going in the water. And I went in the ocean for like the first time in many years and like had a blast. I was like under the waves and boogie boarding and just, all the salt water is everywhere. And I think that's supposed to help you, but it apparently didn't agree with me. And so I got a really bad sinus infection like the third day I was there.
Oh, no.
So besides that, Hawaii was great.
So the second to last time that I went out to Hawaii, I got sick too. In fact, my whole family got sick. So this was the first time that we went back to Hawaii after I moved from there and I was teaching for a mobility WOD and we brought both of our kids, which is a nightmare. Don't ever do this, by the way. Don't fly to Hawaii with a 3-year-old and a year and a half old. Terrible idea. So anyway, they all get like a 24-hour stomach bug and I was fine. I taught Saturday and here to make things worse, it was my 30th birthday that Sunday. And I was teaching at CrossFit 808 and I woke up that morning it was Saturday night. I woke up that morning and I was just sick as could be. And, this is a good example of like, no one fucking cares when you're, you have to show up.
You just got to go.
We got 30 people coming in the next day. And I ate so much Imodium And I didn't eat, drink any water. I taught for 10 hours and then I went home and I slept for like 12.
Yes.
Exactly. And that was, you know, that ruined our Hawaii trip. Once we got out of our system, we had an awesome time. Where did you guys go to dinner, by the way?
We just went to like a place that was right next to the hotel. And we were in Honolulu. So, you know,
wasn't anything. Next time you go to Hawaii, you got to go to Alan Wong's. Alan Wong's is my jam. Remember that. Okay. And if you're in Hawaii, Alan Wong's is the best restaurant there. So, okay. Well, let's talk about this. Cause here's what I think is interesting. Okay. So, you've developed an alter ego for yourself socially, which is awesome. A nickname? Do people just say, "Hey, Movement Maestro," or are they like?
They do. They say, "Hey, Maestro." I don't think people actually know my name, which is like totally fine by me. Like they call me Maestro, and it's awesome because it's happened in the airport when I went to CSM whatever a few months ago. It was down in New Orleans, and I'm walking down Bourbon Street, and you know it's all PTs because it's a big convention, and there's some PTs or some students up in one of the like balcony things, and they're like, "Maestro," and you're like, "This is actually a pretty cool thing." And it's
how awesome is that?
Like, it's a pretty cool feeling. I cannot lie; it's definitely a cool feeling.
Well, back in the day, you had to be like a movie star or on a TV show or you know something like that, something where people saw you visually. And now with social media, it gives us an opportunity to, and if you have, you know, you have a fun personality and like, that's the interesting thing. Like people, the more you can be just like genuine, in my opinion, what I've seen, the more you can just be, you know, like me talking shit about my kids is one thing that people like, you know, more than anything I've come to find out. They're like, "Yeah, my kids suck sometimes too, Danny." You know? And I'm like, "Oh, cool." Cause you know, you're a parent. And if, you know, if you don't know what that feels like, then you may not resonate as much with you. But I think that's something you do really well. You're just, you know, I think that you're just very, very real and transparent. And that's probably why people gravitate towards you. But that movement of actually starting that, you know, social media presence and that sort of personal brand, was that intentional? Was that unintentional? Like
totally unintentional. Backstory, totally unintentional. I started out on Facebook, which is a platform that I now hate. I love Instagram. I hate Facebook. I started out on Facebook and I started everything really because I wanted to, I should back it up a little bit. I started with a website because I wanted to do more treatment within my CrossFit box. And as you know, you're within the community.
Sure.
If you go in the morning, like people in the afternoon don't know you. Or if you go in the afternoon, like people in the morning may not know you.
Yeah.
So I wanted to have a space where they could see my face and roughly get to know what I was about before I tried to go to different times, but I was working a full-time job back then. So you can only go to but so many classes.
Yeah.
So I wanted to have a place where they could see my face. So I started a website from that. And then I started doing some blogging and I wanted a place basically where I could just talk and you know, quote unquote talk because it wasn't a podcast. I mean, just talk and put my views out there, my ideas out there. And so I started on Facebook and I was originally the Movement Mechanic. And then I switched my name because I got a good number of followers pretty quickly. And I was like, "Oh, I should probably check to make sure that nobody has this name like anywhere." Because this, you know, not even wanting to be something bigger, but I was like, I don't want to have to deal with anything, whether it's legal-wise or so, anything like that. So I Googled it and some trademark stuff and realized that this group of massage therapists in like Denver or something, they have it, that name like is trademarked with them.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I got to change it. And I wound up going with Maestro only because of the alliteration. I didn't love the name. And I was like, people are going to say it wrong, which they do. Or people are going to spell it wrong, you know, which they do.
Sure.
But I was like, I like alliteration and I just want, you know, a place to put this out. And so it basically evolved from there on its own. And I never intended to be the Maestro or have this social media presence. It's just something that as I started doing, I realized I liked more and more and more. And it gave me an outlet and a way to communicate with more people and reach more people and connect to more people. You know, one of my favorite quotes is go as far as you can see. When you get there, you'll see farther. And that was really what happened with social media. It was like, I started it and I started realizing, I like this. Oh, I don't like that. I like doing this. I like doing that thing. And it evolved to be what it is now. And it can, you know, continues to evolve.
And I think you have to find the thing that works for you, right? Like you said, Facebook doesn't, it's not the platform you like so much. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Facebook either, except for groups. I think groups are helpful.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You know, that's a little bit more confined conversations, and you can also kick people out if they start to be jackasses. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, so that's helpful. But for some people, like, you know, you recently started a podcast, and I think that's a phenomenal idea because, you know, I was at a marketing conference back in March, and they did a really good presentation. It was called Dominate the Conversation, or Conversation Domination. And they talked about social media platforms, and Instagram was interesting. Instagram, they said, is basically like your own reality TV show. YouTube is like your own sitcom. Facebook is sort of like your own like nightly show, like a, you know, whatever, late night show. And then podcast is like your own radio show, right? Yeah. So we have the opportunity now to have reach when with very little resources necessary. Yes. Besides time, and we didn't really be able to do that before. So for you, it sounds like Instagram is what has resonated most with you.
Yeah, you know, it picked up steam on its own, and I just found, and you make a great point about groups. Like, you can moderate a group and kind of kick people out and curate a good, you know, productive environment. I find that I even though I know that Facebook and Instagram, they're like owned by the same, you know, it's the same entities there. Mm-hmm. The algorithms on Facebook, I think, inherently protect you. And what I mean by that is that I don't think that your posts come up in someone's feed who is just like not really looking for what you have and not really agreeing with what you have. And so inherently you like almost have this built-in support or this like buffer system.
Yeah.
And so I've had nothing but really positive conversations on Instagram. Not that I didn't have that on Facebook, but super positive on Instagram. And so I really, you know, leaned towards that. And then I think just again with the algorithms, it was really hard for me to like have a reach on Facebook, and I felt like they wanted me to pay for everything. And I was like, Instagram's free, and I'm not trying to really do anything or invest money in this. I'll invest time, which I realize is so valuable, but I don't mind investing that. Whereas Facebook, I was like, I have to invest my time and my money, and now you're kicking this back because you're saying that it has text overlay on it and you don't like that. And I was like, I really can't do that, you know. So the main thing though was what you spoke about with the benefit of a group, you know, that you can almost curate this like happy world, or this you know, not as many assholes to have to deal with, not as many trolls to have to deal with.
Well, there's trolls, you know. I mean, I'm sure you've noticed this, like if you're not getting trolled, then you're not saying anything anybody cares about. Exactly. And when I first time I got trolled, I was like a little offended, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. I wasn't a little offended. I was like really offended.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I remember because it was a blog post that I put out, and it was just some random dude from like the middle of nowhere, Arizona, mm-hmm. that just disagreed with what I had to say. Another physical therapist just mm-hmm. disagreed with what I had to say. And I was like angry. I was like, you know, this guy is strengthening my work of art with this comment that I could easily delete. You know? And then I took like a day. I took the Abraham Lincoln approach. I like wrote this terrible response. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to just like leave it here for a day. Yeah. And then I posted it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. Absolutely. You're like, oh,
yeah. But then I was like, ah, fuck it. I'll take it down. And you know, but the thing is like, it's funny. I think people with content, like that's where something you're very scared of initially. And then once you start doing it more, you start to realize like there's actually a positive thing because
absolutely.
There's where they say there's no money in the middle. If you look at the news, right, it's like super right wing, super left wing. Mm-hmm. Like if anybody has like some moderate opinion in the middle, they're boring. You know, nobody's going to make money off of that.
When it comes to entertainment,
have you found? I'd be interested to know like the posts you've put up that have gotten the most negative or polarized responses, like which ones would you say people are most polarized by?
I would say, and honestly, I don't get trolled very much. Like I can probably count on one hand.
I'm going to start trolling you now.
I know, man. Right? I'm blocking.
Hey, that's a dumb quote.
This guy. People try, it's so interesting, people. Would say that the one that, there was, I'm trying to think of one that I did, and I think I've blocked it from my memory because it was so much that I actually just blocked the guy. I was like, I can't even deal with this. But I did one about bunions, and I remember this, not because I got trolled hard, but because the one person who had something pretty negative to say was someone who I thought was my friend. And I was like, what? Like, are you kind of expected from somebody in the middle of nowhere, somebody that you don't know? Because, you know, social media, even though you use that word alter ego, for me, I put myself out there, but social media insulates people, and the people who are trolling you don't realize that there's a human on the other side behind that content.
Right.
It's very hard to troll someone in person. Right? Or after you met them or you talk to them, you're not going to get trolled on a podcast, right? Like, no one's going to say it to your face.
Right.
But when you're on social media, people are very, you know, bold, and they'll put these comments out. So when I got, you know, what I considered to be trolled by someone who I thought was a friend, I was just like, what in the hell is this? And literally all that I had said within that post was that bunions are not genetic. And yes, the components of it, that maybe you have inherent ligamentous laxity, maybe your hips are in such a way that it predisposes you to this, sure. But if you were to never walk, you wouldn't develop a bunion, because it's a matter of force distribution and how you're attenuating those forces at your foot, right? So that was my point, mainly because you see people kind of using this as an excuse to not work on them and things like that. And so the person who wrote back to me is a foot surgeon, you know, no surprise there. And I think it comes from a mindset of scarcity, like, oh my God, you have this platform and you're telling people that bunions are not, you know, genetic, and then they don't need surgery and things like that. And I was like, and she was like, where's the research? And that's my least favorite question. I'm like, listen, this is social media, not a book report. It's free. And so if you want the research, you can use Google, because it works the exact same for me and you. Like, it drives me crazy. So that was probably, you know, the only one that I got told. And you're totally right. It's when you have these strong opinions that people, you know, get butthurt and come at you and write stuff.
Well, and honestly, I feel like anytime somebody throws the research card down, like, you know, when I graduated, I used to do that all the time, because I was a little shithead that was told that, like, you know, so it has to have a Cochrane review. Yeah. And, you know, if you've ever read a Cochrane review, please tell me if you ever read one that didn't say more research is needed.
Exactly.
They all say that. And you know, so you forget the fact that, like, there's anecdotal experience and that people are complex. And, you know, so anyway, I think it's very easy. You know, and maybe this person is not new out of their profession, but I see it a lot in younger PT.
Oh, yes.
Just like, oh, absolutely. Well, the research says this. It's like, yeah, motherfucker, but that's a real person. That's
exactly.
You know, and they're having some serious problems, and maybe you should just learn how to talk to them instead of break down, like, research. And so, you know, you have to understand all of it. But that's funny, you know. So, okay, so you got a little bit of hate with that. What has been the most surprising for you in terms of growth with your platform? You know, like, are there certain topics that you were surprised that people are really interested in?
No, I would say frustrating more than surprising. Like, if you just look at the current state of our country, you just kind of look at the general demographic, look at what's really popular on TV, you know, something like the Kardashians. We know that when it comes to entertainment, which at the end of the day, social media is first and foremost entertainment.
True.
People aren't looking for these really super complex topics. And so typically some of the more basic posts that you put out, the more basic it is, the easier it is for people to digest it and for them to latch onto it and for them to, you know, understand it and be like, yeah, I agree too. And those posts do the best. And it's super frustrating, because you could have what you think is a fire post, and you're like talking about neurology or pain science, some, you know, whatever, some complex thing, and you've dissected it and you made a really cool graphic, and it does, like, okay. And then you put up, like, some, you know, bullshit thing of, like, a hamstring stretch, something like that. And then it's like a million likes, and you're like, I talked to Hunter Fitness, and it was funny. We know each other by, you know, your Instagram,
social media. Yeah,
exactly. Right. So your social media
is freaky flexible.
Freaky flexible, right? So I talk to him pretty frequently. He's a really awesome guy, and we have this discussion all the time about how the posts that you want to do well, they usually aren't the ones that do the best. It's the ones that are just the most entertaining. And he's super, like you said, freaky flexible. And he'll put up posts of him doing, you know, what he calls stupid human tricks, and people love it. And then he puts up something that's like about, hey, this is how I got this way. This is kind of my inherent, you know, genetic status with things. And this is, like, how, you know, the work that's gone into this. And people are like, okay.
I know.
It's like, ah!
So I know. No, it's interesting. It's, but also I think that it's sort of hard to quantify the superficial relationships that you can develop, or superficial followers. And then there's some that are just like, that goes really deep.
Yes.
And, you know, it's interesting. I'd actually be really interested with your podcast, you have a few episodes out now, you know, how much carryover you have from your Instagram page mm-hmm. to the podcast, because a podcast, you know, there's an interesting article that I saw in Wire magazine or wire.com, I guess it was, about podcast listeners being sort of like the golden
absolutely listener. The best time.
Oh my gosh. So they said that on average, like a podcast subscriber on average listens to 95% of all podcasts by that person. Puts it out. So, you know, ours are typically between, you know, a Tuesday one will be longer, like 30 to 60 minutes. And then a Thursday one will be like 10 to 15 mm-hmm. maybe. And, you know, the average attention span of an adult is like 6 seconds.
Yes.
So you're telling me somebody's going to listen to 60 minutes of something mm-hmm. every time you put it out? Like that's interesting to me. Because I'll tell you the other thing. I have this mastermind group that was in town and you know, one of the people was kind of like, well, hey, you know, how do you know that all this content stuff works? Like what have you seen? And besides our business growth and all that stuff, like, and I go, well, you're all sitting here,
you know, exactly. Like, you paid come here and listen to this. So
yeah, I go, you just look around and they're like, good point.
Done.
So how's that going for you? How's the podcast so far?
So I literally just launched it basically officially yesterday.
Okay. So you have four episodes, right?
Yeah. So I have a bunch that are saved up, but basically what I was doing, I mean, you know, the podcast game. So I have been recording them and I had a new website rolling out, so I didn't want to put them on iTunes and put them on Google Play with an old website because, you know, it has to point to certain RSS feeds and things like that. So it's annoying if you start something and then change in the middle. So I was just waiting for the website to launch. So the website was basically done and rolled out. So I made everything official yesterday because it had some kind of like back end troubles with starting the podcast and RSS feeds and things like that. So that's actually what you just brought up is one of the reasons I started the podcast and that being in terms of connecting with people. Mm-hmm. I think that I've curated a good following, but again, the numbers, you don't really know what they truly mean. Yeah. I can say things based on, how it carries over into course attendees, how it carries over into emails I get, how it carries over into relationships that I know that I formed. But that was actually my goal, was to now have a platform because I found that people are invested in me. And I wanted a platform where I could give them more and connect with them more. And that's exactly what a podcast, like you said, you hit the nail on the head. I formed a relationship with my good friend now, Jimmy McKay. He, you know, PT Pinecast.
He's great, man. I like him a lot.
He's just such a good human. I mean, the quality of his content and the sound obviously is amazing. His awesome. Background with radio. And I sat down with him and I was like, why did you get into radio? Like what, you know, why did you get into podcasts? And you know, he's like, it's the oldest form of communication, like the spoken word. And he's like, it's something that will endure time. And when you have this audience, when you are able to put something out that people want to sit with you for this amount of time, it's truly forms these bonds and these connections. And from a business perspective, if you will, and you hit the nail on the head with earlier in this episode, we can now as individuals do something that big companies cannot do. And then they want that. You have a big following and you say, hey, buy this thing, take this course, listen to this thing. People are invested in you and they will do it.
Yeah.
You know, you look at, as trivial as it may be, I think I saw something the other day about like Rihanna and Snapchat. And she said, first of all, that platform, I'm too old, I think, but
totally
I saw something with Rihanna and Snapchat and basically, I don't know if it's true or not, but the gist was she said to not use it and like Snapchat stocks plummeted. One person said this because one person can do now, yes, she's a huge name, but you can scale that down and see what one person can do and the buy-in that people get from the relationships they form with this person. Big companies can't do it. Big company can't say, hey, trust me, this is good. You're going to like this product. But one person who's formed this relationships and has put out, created this following, they can do that. And that was basically my goal with starting the podcast. And so as I'm, you know, looking at analytics now for the first time, I never really did it before, and trying to see how that carries over. Absolutely.
Well, what's the, I have a decent amount of people that reach out to me asking about like, should they start a podcast? Right. My answer is always sort of, it depends. And there's an opportunity cost with everything. You know, if you're putting your time towards it. So I'm interested with yours, you know, what's the monetization point of it? Like, are you trying to delve into, you know, more patients that you may be seeing from this, or more people attending your course, or digital products or something like that, or all of the above? Like, what's the goal yeah. besides reaching people at a deeper level?
So definitely not to get more patients. I am the first to say I don't love treating. Yeah, that's not
because my wife wanted to hire you.
That is not my. That's what I would be a terrible hire because I
know. That's why I say, well, she lives in California.
Number one,
she travels all the time.
Exactly.
I don't want a job though, legit. Like,
you got but it. I'm moving out. Atlanta. I love it. I appreciate that. I treat once a week, right? For those that know me, I treat once a week, and I treat to make sure that what I teach is valid and relevant and sure. works and is true. I think that there's a lot of people out there that are teaching based on theory, and we tend to when we are looking back at schooling, we tend to rag on the professors who we now realize weren't really treating as much. And so we're like, how can you even say this? And yet when it comes to social media, we don't really question, I think, as much the voices out there who maybe aren't treating as much. Like, theory is awesome, but like some of these things that I see out there, I'm like, you can't do that in a session. And I know that my model doesn't apply to everyone. I have an hour, at least an hour, with everyone that I treat. And so some of the stuff that I can look into and get into, I know that that typical therapist that's seeing someone for 20 minutes like I used to do cannot do those things. And we need to, you know, I think it's on us to kind of put that out there for people to be like, hey, there's a difference with this stuff. So I treat, you know, just to kind of put it out there, I treat to make sure that what I'm teaching is relevant and to kind of, you know, stay relevant to the public. But what my goal is kind of with doing the podcast is one, definitely to have people come to courses, but also to, my goal is to start my own courses. So I'm within Rock Tape and I do courses for them. But I like other stuff besides Rock Tape, and they know that and they support that. And so in trying to grow my brand so that I can have my courses, you know, and have.
Give me like a teaser. What's
a teaser?
What's the Maestro course? So, I'm interested.
I have a few ideas, but the one that I'm working on currently and like kind of devoting most of my energy to is about keeping it simple. I think that there's too many courses that you go to and then you're like, well, I can't, like, what can I do on Monday?
Exactly.
Like, what can I put into play? Like, yeah, these ideas are amazing, but like, what the hell? And then they end up doing nothing with it because it's everything that they got was like, this is a, you know, crazy complex system or something. And they're like, well, shit, I can like, all right, I guess I'm going to just treat the way I was and have spent $900 this weekend.
That's so freaking accurate. Like, I remember when I went to SFMA for the first time. Mm-hmm. It was the first Con Ed course I took out of school.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the flow charts. And I was just like, okay, yeah. I'm going to do like these screens and I'm going to use them as a test retest and keep doing the shit that I was doing before.
Exactly.
I didn't know what the heck, you know, dysfunctional non-pill pattern.
You know, like, example. Yes, I took that course. That was probably my first course out. And it took me 3 years to implement it. Three years. Because so I was like, do I put these flowcharts on the wall? Or like,
what? Oh, yeah. Or look back at them. And I'm just like,
this book is pretty thick. I don't know what to.
No, I totally know what's going on. Hang on, I got to step out of the room for a second. And I'm like, look at these flowcharts. They're like, okay. And then I forget what they are when I come back in the room. wait a second, they need something. And I go, like, look at it again. It's confusing. So yeah, if you could have something that I could say, like, all right, on Monday, I'm doing X, Y, and Z.
That is my goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, originally when I first started thinking about this, wanting to do it, I was aiming it at new grads. And then the more that I started teaching, I've been teaching for Rock Tape for, you know, 2.5 years now. And the more that I taught for and have been teaching for them, the more that I realized that this even applies to the seasoned clinician who is leaving one setting and maybe going into more so ortho. Like, you have tons of people who have been in, they're great clinicians, and maybe they've been in, you know, SNFs, or they've been in acute care or subacute, something like that. And they haven't been in this ortho realm, and they have the skill set, but they just need someone to kind of package it and make it digestible for them. And so that is my goal, is to basically give people something that, hey, you can use this on Monday, and here, and also open their eyes to, hey, you know, when you come to a roadblock, here are a few other courses that you can take, not from me, but here are a few other courses that you can take. So if you want to go down that rabbit hole, you can, but let me give you a cursory overview and my interpretation, my understanding of how I use this on the day to day with the populations that I see.
Well, I think that's a great idea. And for you, like, we look at, you know, this idea of a company like Rock Tape that allows you the flexibility to do some things that are, you know, more entrepreneurial, I think is great. Mobility Watt is like that with me as well. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't have stayed if it wasn't, honestly. And that's how they keep, you know, people that, you know, are outside the box thinkers in certain ways, but still are like good, you know, good employees for them in a lot of ways too. How many people would you say you've taught, through Rock Tape in the last few years? Like, what's the number? That's a lot. It's gotta be.
It's a lot. Yeah. One day I was like, I should have written down. I mean, I don't even know, because the class size can vary so much. Like, so Rock Tape partnered with Vine, which is another continuing education company, and we offer courses for them. And so sometimes I'll have courses, which I don't love, I'm not going to lie. I've had courses where there's like 60 people in it, and you're like, oh, that's too many. But, and then you'll have
60 other in like the one that we did, 60?
Yes.
With a
Blades course or taping. I don't mind doing it with a taping course. I don't love it with a Blades course. And Rock Tape caps their courses. Vine doesn't. And I'm like, this is too many people. Just so, you know, for quality of delivery of what you're, you know, and just having that, like being able to walk around and being like, yeah, what you're doing is quote unquote correct. I hate to like put things in a box like that, but yeah, when you have a tool in your hand, you can definitely like do things that are incorrect to somebody. So I don't love that, but it's been, you know, I do 2 to 3 courses a month. The courses can range from 20 to, you know, 60 people in the course. Some weeks, if I'm doing a Vine tour, it would be 3 days of 3 courses, you know, in a row. So you'll have 100 people on a great tour. You'll have 100 people that you've taught in that week.
Wow.
Which is one of the, honestly though, that's one of the reasons that I got into teaching. I wanted to get into teaching was for that reach. You know, when I started with social media and realized like the impact you could have at first, you know, when I was a PT originally, I was like, I just want to be the best PT I can and influence, you know, patients and that way have that impact on patients. And then started realizing the massive effect in a good way that you could have on people through teaching, and that ripple effect of like, you help this clinician, who helps that patient, who helps that person.
Well, did you want to be a teacher when you were in PT school? Do you think you may want to be a professor?
I never wanted to be a professor because I don't like rules. So I always loved that, like, teaching kind of role, but I saw right away that you're so limited in what you can teach and your schedule and things like that when you're in traditional academia. Like, I liken a professor to, you know, the traditional staff clinician, which nothing wrong with that, but I knew that I wanted to be more of the entrepreneurial clinician, aka more of the continuing ed educator. So that was kind of always from the get-go. I was like, I want to teach, but I knew, I was like, I don't want to be a professor because we're limited in what you can teach.
Were you a weird little kid like me that was like buying candy at wholesale and selling it on the playground? Like,
you're a hustler. Look at you. I actually was not. That's amazing.
Oh my God. I don't even want to tell you some of the things I sold growing up because people would stop listening to this podcast. that's just the way, I mean, you say you don't like rules, right? Like, yeah. I think that sometimes that's not a bad thing because it kind of look at things like, well, maybe there's a better way. You know?
Yes, exactly. Like,
there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's what drives innovation and entrepreneurship. And, you know, for you, I think it's fascinating that you're, what are you?
You so with the candy, I'm imagining you as like a little kid.
Imagine a little curly head. 8-year-old on the playground buying warheads and selling, you know, warheads to kids for 50 cents after buying it at Sam's Club.
Amazing. This like makes me smile so big.
Yeah, that was it. And now, you know, now I'm talking about business.
Exactly. I'm like, it makes sense. I was not that kid and I've never been that person. I actually didn't realize I don't love rules until later on. I was always that by the book kid, and I like went to school. I did very well in school, and it was like, you follow the rules, they're there for a reason. And then I started realizing, like exactly what you said, hey, maybe there's a better way to do these things.
Yeah.
And that actually, I think, has always been my mantra of a better way to do things and a better way to explain things to people. I think that's kind of where I've tried to inadvertently develop a niche and just kind of explaining things and making them digestible for people and acting as that kind of translator for that, educating people in that way.
Well, you know what I think would be interesting? You have a natural, I think, a real knack for just education and making complex topics more simplified and easier to understand. And I'm not blowing smoke up people's ass. Like, the course that I went to, I honestly just went because it was Brandon. Yeah. You know, it was his
awesome guy.
It's my boy, him and Jim. And I needed some tools for another office. And I was like, oh, and Chantel or Chantel's teaching. Cool. All right. I'm there. It was a win-win, but then I was like, dude, this is one of the best courses I've ever been to. This is awesome. And you know, so, you know, I feel like there's an opportunity to teach other instructors how to be better instructors, including, and this is where I get a bit disgruntled in some cases with like, the tenure kind of approach with, you know, structured school where a lot of it just kind of keeps, it's the same stuff over and over again. And students reach out to me like, dude, I'm learning ultrasound. Why? Mm-hmm. You know? And I go, cause you got to pass the test. You know? Why, you know, why can't we learn about something else? Oh, like, I don't learn ultrasound too. So I don't know. It's, I'd like to know your opinion on that. Like, how do you feel like the structured kind of education system could maybe change?
You know, you don't want the pendulum to swing too far, but sure. Sometimes it has to swing completely the other direction before it comes back to a healthy middle. And I think that's what we need right now is that, like, I get those same questions or the same frustrated outreach from students who are just like, why am I learning this? Or like, I just took the board and they have questions on there that I know are objectively wrong. Like, I do stuff with pelvic floor. I used to do a lot more treating pelvic floor. And so, like, somehow because I talk about it on some of my posts, like, people think that I, like, that's like what I treat all the time now. It's not. But I have people reaching out to me and they're like, there are questions on the boards. I just took that last, you know, took it last week that are wrong. And you see this and you're just like, I agree. And that's, there's a reason that it continues to be that same model because it's the same voices, it's the same structure, and no one's kind of like bucking the system.
Yeah.
So I agree. It needs to change. I think that it's going to be very much a bottom-up change and it's going to be extremely gradual. I don't know if we'll see it in our lifetime. I don't know. I'm not going to be pessimistic with that. But I think that we see it on social media and in, like, you know, your Facebook groups and things like that, the people that want this change, but then you also see how relatively small that group may be.
Yeah.
I don't say that in a bad way. I think that I don't in the least say that in a bad way. I think that one, the fact that it is so small that it almost ensures the success of those people who actually try and take the extra steps.
Yep.
But absolutely the model needs to change. The educational platform, educational system needs to change. And then it needs to be a push from within. It needs to be, you know, the PTs coming up from the bottom. What is his name? Totally blanking right now. Zach Gabor, my boy Zach Gabor, Simple Strength Physio, is doing a big push with that. He's starting this thing called the Level Up Initiative, and it's basically getting current clinicians and current students on board to try and make a change. And that's in my opinion, that's the way it's gonna change it as it relates to the healthcare model. That's the way it's gonna change. It's gonna be because the patient, the consumer, demands the change, not that it comes from the top down.
Well, and we have so many options now too. You know, I think that's something that's really and it's really cool to see. To where, I mean, I help students start practices right out of school. You know,
we
like
need that, man.
I agree. I mean, I think that in many cases, you know, we can help a lot of people and we have opportunities to kind of have these micro clinics that we can really niche down on something that we're passionate about, but also maybe we have a background in and we can, you know, pick the people that we want to be like the right fit for. And I just see like the entrepreneurial options in our profession as just becoming more and more, more and more prevalent. In particular with, I know you teach a lot and you travel a lot, but we've already talked about this. Like it can be kind of exhausting and it kind of can be kind of challenging on relationships and family and stuff. Do you see yourself traveling this much forever? Or are you looking to like kind of, cut back on traveling and add a couple other things that are potential revenue streams in to where you could still reach people?
I would say the latter. You know, it's definitely not sustainable to travel all the time. And it's a cool evolution. You know, back to that quote from earlier, go as far as you can see. When you get there, you'll see farther. It's a cool evolution where, you know, 2.5 years ago when I first started with Rock Tape, it was like, I took any tour. I just wanted to get out there and see, do I like this? And now I can be more selective with things and it's an awesome feeling. And then to be able to like, hey, this is actually what I want to do. So I want to go international with my travel and reach people and connect with people that way. Mm-hmm. But definitely scaling back with things. And because it's one, it's like you said, it's exhausting. And two, I now live in a place that I love. When I first started traveling in New York, I hated it. So I was like, put me on the road, get me the hell out of here. It's always cold. I hate cold.
Yeah.
So it was fine. Excuse me. I live in beautiful Southern California now. I live a mile from the beach. I drive a Jeep. I love my home life.
Yeah.
And so, no, I don't want to be on the road, you know, 75% of the month. So definitely the goal is always to work smarter, not harder, and be happy while doing it. So that's, you know, part of the reason with the podcast too, to have a reach, connect with people, and then allow me to set up courses in other places that I want to go to and be able to travel when I want, how I want, and, you know, diversify that portfolio, if you will, and have other revenue sources, hence the new website also. That was it.
Well, I'm interested too with the model that Rocktape has. Are you guys incentivized to, when you have more people there, do you make more money or is it a flat rate?
It's a flat rate, which I actually like for Rocktape. So it depends, as everything in life, it depends. Yeah. When we teach through Vine, the more people that are there, the more you get paid. But again, yeah. I don't love teaching 40 people, 50 people. Like,
exhausting.
It's cool. Yeah, it's me cool and being like, oh, this energy, but like, it's a lot. So with Rocktape, it's a flat fee, whether there are 15 people there or if our max, we cap it at 40, there are 40 there.
Yeah.
Which for me, I don't mind, but I know that's my personality type. I was not the kid on the playground that said, hey, I bought
selling
this
candy.
Buy it this way. I was the kid that was like, come together and let's talk about this. Let me show you how I like to do this. And so for me, that's why I don't mind that particular model.
Do you know, do you get more people that come to your courses than other instructors? Are you like, do they keep track of that? Is there like a, they should have an award. I feel like people.
Yeah, so we do have awards.
You do? Like, hey, this person had the most attendance.
So we have an MVP. It's not really based on attendance. And I'm sure that, I mean, they do keep track because it's numbers, objective measures, right?
Yeah.
But we have an awards thing, like a fun thing at our instructor summit every January, which is in Mexico. It was a really fun time. But in terms of getting people to the courses, the way that I look at it and is not necessarily, excuse me, hold on. That Hawaii killed me.
Don't worry about that, man. We don't edit anything out, so everyone will hear you do that.
Yes, yeah, so like right boogie into the mic.
That's good.
The way that I've looked at it is in terms of people who, when I teach now, know me already. And that to me is awesome. And they come to the course to kind of hear my take on things, which for me, I can monetize because I know that these people are invested. I can get them on a mailing list. I can get them to my course when I teach, when I roll that out.
Yeah.
So that's gonna kind of, in terms of numbers, what I'm looking at. You know, I think the person who probably always has the most is going to be Perry. When he does teach, he doesn't like to teach with us that much anymore. And so it's been cool to very much follow in his footsteps. And so this whole year, 2018, I booked my entire schedule. So the first year I did basically all Vine courses while at Vine Tours. The second year it was a combo and it was like Rocktape gives you courses. Like someone reaches out, they want a course and Rocktape will, you know, send instructors based on like kind of good fits and things like that. This year I have booked every single course that I'm teaching. And so it's shown me like there is a demand, there is a, you know, people want to hear from you. You know, they reach out, we set up a course, things like that, which is kind of how I want to roll that into next year with doing more of my own courses and, yeah, and kind of monetizing it that way.
Well, and put you on the spot. So in five years, with everything that you're working on, what would be an absolute home run for you to be able to say, like, I'm able to do this now at this point from a work standpoint?
I would love to be, you know, honestly, I'm not going to lie. I love my life right now. And it's a little bit scary because when you get comfortable, you get complacent.
Totally.
And I know that I need to push more. And so I'm like trying to like light that fire under my own ass. Like, you must do more. You must do more. But in 5 years, I would love to say that I have a place that I'm living that I can see the ocean from. And I can do my podcasting. I can drive my Jeep and I can travel internationally. That would be like, that would be, I'm very happy with the way life is. And, you know, and that's what my goal is. I'm making moves to have that happen.
I feel like you could do that next month if you wanted to. You know, you have like, you have some pretty, like, not easy, but like, you have goals that are like, yeah, I mean, simple,
that's
but
it.
You know, defined.
Absolutely.
I tell you what, you know, when we lived in Hawaii, we were about 50 yards from the beach. We weren't on the beach. We could see it through the beach park. We could hear it every morning, every night, you know, like the sound of the waves is something I miss more than anything. And just being able to like walk out on our back porch with a cup of coffee and just like the kind of like the smell and the sounds are just like something that I don't know, it's hard to describe. Like if you haven't, yes. Going to the beach and visiting is one thing, but like when you get used to that for years, it's something that, it's tough to leave. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, it's interesting, like for you, you know, having those goals, I think is just super important, but I love the one about being near the water. And here's the other question I have for you, because do you ever get jealous of people that can be complacent?
Yes. Yes. And
I totally
no.
do. I'm just like, I feel like we have some kind of weird disease sometimes.
Yeah. Like, what more? I'm gonna do this. Like, and you're like, damn, can I just like rest today?
I just see people and they're just like, you know, oh man, I played like Modern Warfare for like 3 hours this weekend and I just had an awesome time. And I think to myself, I would feel like such a crap if I did that.
I get it. I see it. I say yes and no, because since moving to LA, I have been able to slow down so much. When I was in New York is great, you know, but it is a grind 24/7 just to get on the train. Is a grind. Just to get to work is a grind. And so moving here, I've been able to slow down so much. And there's definitely projects that I'm working on now that if I lived in New York, I would have probably had finished 8 months ago. Because like when I first moved here, I would be driving home, and to get home, I'd have to drive up the PCH, and I would just stop at the beach and stay there for 3 hours. So and then I wouldn't get things done. So like I've been able to slow things down and be that kind of Call of Duty person. So, you know, in some ways I say I'm not jealous because I think I can do that. And then the flip side though, is the people that you see, and nothing wrong with this, the people that you see who are content to live kind of close to where they were born, where they grew up, they married the person that they went to high school with, they have two kids and they're like, yeah, this is my life and I love it. And I'm just like, well, dang, that's good. That seems easy and attainable, achievable goals. And I'm happy for you, but not at all what I want.
You know, it's weird. I feel the same way too with, you know, I graduated high school in Augusta, Georgia. So my senior year of high school was there and we lived there before and then we moved back. And, so I have some friends there that I don't really keep up with too many people from there, but, some of them I do. I bumped into somebody. My folks still live there, and is a friend of mine from high school, and he still lives there. And I think he thinks that that town is like the greatest place in the world. And you know, I don't know. It's just like to him, it's amazing. Yeah. And maybe, you know, ignorance is bliss. But you know, when you get a chance to go to some place that is like for instance, like Lake Como in northern Italy, and you're like, holy shit, this is amazing. Like, you know, like, sorry, but you're wrong. Like, you just don't know until you see that. But you know, it doesn't mean they're not really happy as well. And I think the other negative, and this is not necessarily a negative, but it's a flaw of people that are high drive to achieve, is that we tend to be very future biased. Like, we're very like, oh, what can I do next? Oh, what can I do next? Like, oh, I see this opportunity. I've got to take this opportunity. And then there's certain people that are very past biased, right? These are people that are always talking about that. Hey, remember we won the state championship in football? You know, and I'm like, I do.
15 years ago.
Congratulations. And then there's certain people, and these are the people I think are very rare, are people that are very present biased. And they're always like in the moment, and they can you know, really understand like the things that are going around them. I think it's very hard to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, for you, I see like you have a lot of stuff going on, and the fact that you can stop at the beach and spend 3 hours and just fucking chill, I think, is amazing.
A game changer. I did a podcast. I haven't released it yet, but I did a podcast called Happiness as a Home Base. And the more that I look at social media and just everything, and just looking at people and observing things, the more that you see that number one is that you're happy as a baseline. It doesn't mean whether it's physically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever. And for me, that's why, you know, you asked what my goal is in 5 years. And it's like, to be able to see the water, because that I know that if I have happiness as my home base and a place that I'm happy, a mind state of mind that I'm happy, everything else will be okay. And I can do anything from there.
Yeah.
So it's like, financial stuff, financial goals and like tangible, objective, you know, things to have. I have nothing wrong with having things. I like having things. I like technology. I love gadgets. So like, I can have goals and stuff like that. If I have that happiness as a home base, like, and I can be in that moment, everything else will be okay and I will be successful. I know that.
I think that's a perfect way to end the podcast. What a good statement. It just hit the 15-second rewind twice. and then listen to that again and take it to heart, because that's dead on. I totally agree. So, all right, Maestro, give us where people can reach out, the name of your podcast, the website, or like where, if you want to connect with you, where do they go?
Absolutely. So to connect with me, I try to keep it the same. It's The Movement Maestro, M-A-E-S-T-R-O. So if you go on my website, it's www.themovementmaestro.com. If you're looking for me on social media, it is The Movement Maestro. And then podcast-wise, it'll be Maestro, no The, Maestro on the Mic, trying to hit that alliteration. So you can contact me on any of those platforms. Email is themovementmaestro@gmail.com. I try to make things as simple as I can for the folks out there. Yeah. It's hard enough to spell maestro.
True. I agree. I like the way it rolls off the tongue, though. I think it's a smart choice. Better than mechanic.
Yeah, I like
mechanic
it.
Mechanic makes things like, you know, a little
up and go. Yeah, no, greasy, I get it.
You know, and I don't think that with maestro, I think like, oh, a symphony or something.
Is that right?
So that's, yeah, good job with that one. But this has been a fun talk, man. This has been one of my favorite conversations. I knew this was going to be a good one. I mean, it was fun to be able to have you at the bro session dinner in
But like, look at all these guys,
man.
Look,
you handled that around me so well. I know. I feel like I had my mastermind group in town this weekend, and I've been getting reamed by people because it's all males.
Yeah, it's all dudes, you know. And can I interject there for 1 second?
Go ahead.
I saw that, and I'm working on something for, you know, female oriented, but you know, it's easy again to attack someone without knowing them and, you know, go at you and Danny, like, oh, Danny, white guy, then he has all white group. Like, you didn't handpick just those people and say nobody.
Well, there was an Asian and an African.
Okay, just sorry.
Group, by the way, so I will say we had some diversification.
Yeah, look at this. We had. Like, it's just the way that things are. It's the way that the society is. The way the culture is, and like, you can't blame that one person. So one, I commend you for having that mindset for what you're doing in general. Right. And two, I'm gonna flip the script a little bit and say, hey, females out there, get off your asses and let's try and do something. Like, yeah. We should call this to attention and be like, hey, look, there's only this. But also, if we don't create it, then that's all that's going to continue to exist.
So. No, it's totally true. And look, my wife is an absolute stud, and she helped to develop about half the curriculum for that weekend. She presented on some really difficult kind of business topics. And, you know, it wasn't for lack of trying. I mean, this is a paid group. It's an investment, and these people are all investing their time and money in me. And you know, we did definitely have a few females that we reached out to that just said no.
Yeah.
But even my mom called me yesterday. Like, she was like, hey, I'm going to town for her birthday. She was like, hey, what's up with your group being all men? And I was like, damn it. Come on, all people, like, you got to be on my side. Like, but you know, I mean, it also is, I'm sure that females resonate with your message. I mean, you probably have more of that population that would want to, you know, spend time around you, and more, you know, people my age that would want to and gender that would want to spend time around me. And I think it's just natural.
It's just natural. We gravitate towards what we're familiar with, what we, you know, we can connect with, what we understand, which is oftentimes what looks like us. And so there's nothing wrong with that. It is what it is.
Totally. It's good. You know, hey, it's fine. I'm just excited that people give a fuck, because we talked about that, you know, like the fact that you're right. I mean, like, dude, call it out. Even my wife was like, "What's up with that? Where are all the badass women entrepreneurs in our community?" And I go, "Yeah, no, I want that." You know, like, there's so many different positives and negatives associated with, you know, like, we're good at different things and we look at things slightly differently. And so, anyway, maybe we'll even get the maestro there one day, and I tell you, we'll get you to that freaking beach house, homie. I'm going to be there.
I love it.
All right. Well, yeah, that's a promise. We'll end it on that, guys. Thank you so much for listening. The Movement Maestro, again, has been awesome. So, guys, make sure you look her up on social media, and we look forward to the courses that you have coming up under your own brand. But also, if you are interested, check out Rock Tape and Rock Blades. Great instructor. Should definitely check her out, and you get your CEUs at the same time. So, guys, thanks so much for joining us, and we will catch you next time. Hey, real quick before we go, I just want to say thanks so much for listening to this podcast. If you're one of the people that's already headed over to iTunes and left me a review, I really appreciate it. There's been over 50 iTunes reviews, and all of them being 5 stars, that have been left on this podcast since we started in August.
That's awesome. And I read every single review. I take every little piece of advice that you give me in there, any criticism, any positive feedback that you have, I read all of it. And it's amazing to see that we're even getting reviews internationally at this point. So if you're one of the people that's reviewed the podcast, thanks so much. If you're an active listener of this podcast, I highly, highly encourage you to subscribe to the podcast and go to iTunes and leave me a short review. I'd love to hear what you have to say, and it really does help me get this information in front of more people. So guys, thanks again for your time, and keep listening.